All right, thank you very much. Yeah, so I'm going to cover some of the highlights of the work we've done over the last couple of years looking at manganese deficiencies in Michigan. So in Michigan, we have a problem on manganese is probably our chief micronutrient deficiency, and we have a problem with that on a couple different soil types. Our high pH lake bed soils, really remnants of old Lake Huron, Lake Erie, soils that can tend to have a pH of upwards of 8, we run into some pH issues there as well. But really, our biggest challenge with manganese then in Michigan is on our histosol soils. So we get that complexation with organic compounds of the manganese in the soil, which results in some unavailability to the plant. But we can also get pH interactions as well. And you can see here that really we start to run into some deficiencies on organic soils at lower pHs, really, than what we might otherwise encounter on our typical mineral soils. So this project really came about of conversations with growers, especially dealing with the situations that they encounter. So typically on some of these deficient soils that we have year after year in Michigan, we have producers that are dealing with a deficiency that comes on usually about the V2 stage, pretty early in the crop growth cycle. And that typically corresponds with some of their initial weed control timing. Especially on these organic matter soils, pre-emergent herbicides don't work very well, so they're relying upon glyphosate, if not exclusively, is certainly a majority of the weed control aspects, and that has implications in the system. But they're also dealing with coming back once or twice, typically in the season, to reapply foliar products to treat these reoccurring deficiencies. So it's fairly common to apply manganese from 1 to 3, maybe 4 times in the season on some of these soils. So the primary challenge that they've come to us discussing is really twofold. And there's certainly some more contributing factors of this, but these are the main points that they've really talked to us about, is the fact that there's questions about how to incorporate glyphosate into that system. They would prefer to tank mix the product simply from the fact if they're going out in the field once, have accomplished both of those things at once. But that is kind of swayed by some consistent and or inconsistent, conflicting personal experience with them. Sometimes that system works well, sometimes it doesn't, and there isn't an awful lot to correlate when those instances occur. But also, looking at simply what foliar product to apply. Typically, they're going upon recommendations from local co-ops, local consultants, but we really don't have a mechanism by which to compare different products amongst one another. So we initiated this work back in 2009. Some of the work dealing with the products we began in 2010, but we're dealing with predominantly two sites here in Michigan. Muck soil sites, histosol soils, fairly higher pHs, higher organic matters, and these are pretty common for the muck production systems we have in Michigan. So for both of these studies, then, the field procedures are largely the same, pretty typical agronomic production in Michigan. We're operating in narrow rows. These plots were designed in a randomized complete block, and we use stats at a 0.1 level to compare means. So the first study I'm going to talk about here, then, is this idea of tank mixing manganese and glyphosate together. And typically this is a concern early on in the season when you're trying to hit both those early season deficiencies and control the weeds. So we really approached this with two separate management scenarios of tank mixing these two products together to try to minimize total applications, with following a grower mindset a little bit, too, that we might compromise the individual timings of one so that we can make sure that we're just minimizing total applications. And compare that then to a case where we're separating out the applications and trying to keep a window there from glyphosate of putting our manganese on at least 3 days before or 7 days after. And this study and the following one I'll talk about too, we're comparing these to a control receiving no manganese fertilizer. So we looked at, in this study, we looked at three different products then, kind of representing a range of the different formulations and chemistries growers have available to them from foliar treatment. A manganese sulfate product, an unchelated, a dry product, a sugar alcohol from Brandt Industries, and then a typical EDTA chelated. And then we use glyphosate, the potassium salt formulation, as our glyphosate product. So perhaps one of the easier ways to kind of determine of the effectiveness of these two scenarios, this tank mixing versus separate applications, is simply to look at what we had to do to manage these systems within a year. So for this graphical interface here, we can basically look at our tank mix combinations are there in that orange bar, our separate applications are in the green, and these are averaged across the three different fertilizers we use. That we saw some results in grain yields between the different fertilizers, but in season we didn't notice much of a difference between different products and how they did controlling weed control and manganese deficiency throughout the season. So we have our manganese fertilizer applications represented in the white circles, our glyphosate application in these gray circles. And so you can see that early on in the season at the Sahuasa site, this is a fairly typical scenario of what we would see, that we applied manganese a few days before glyphosate in our separate applications. We mixed them a few days later for a tank mix situation. And this is about what we would expect to see. And certainly this echoes some of what growers have articulated, is the fact that when you tank mix these two products together, they don't work as well, that the manganese isn't as effective treating a deficiency. And in this instance, we had to come back in about a week later and reapply manganese. And furthermore, we had to come back in early August and clean up weed escapes that we didn't control when tank mixing those products. So that kind of follows along with what we'd expect to see. Our other site for in 2009 here at Stockbridge was the fact that we saw a little bit of conflicting results from this, that when we separated those applications, we ended up having to come in twice more in the season to apply manganese fertilizers. It becomes less of a factor if I think growers would be more than happy to apply an extra shot of manganese if they still get higher yields. And so if we contrast that and look at with our yields. So this is our Owosso site then in 2009. And you'll recall that we are, based on our application events, those tank mixing products probably weren't as effective as separating those out those applications early in the year. And that's echoed here in our yields then. So our tank mix scenarios are still in that orange bars, our separate applications in the green. And you can see here, broken down between the different products, we have a couple different trends here emerge. That EDTA formulation of manganese tended to be a poorer performer than those other products, especially the manganese sulfate. And when you compare that, each of those individual products within the scenarios, you can certainly see here too, the separating out those applications resulted in increased grain yield than from tank mixing them early in the season. And so that same sort of trend was held true at Stockbridge as well. Despite the fact we had more applications in that separate application scenario at Stockbridge, we still ended up getting increased yields compared to tank mixtures. And certainly at this site, too, it kind of brings home the importance of treating manganese deficiencies in the field for us. If you look at our control treatment where we didn't apply manganese fertilizer, it's difficult to retain any crop in the most challenging of deficiency situations. So we repeated the study again in 2010, and we had a little bit more of a trying environmental year in 2010. This site in Owosso really got hit by drought pretty hard in the later half of June and through July. And so we really had an overall reduction in plant vigor and probably an associated reduction in just demand for manganese. We can see here that throwing in a manganese application with our glyphosate application early in the season, which is what producers would commonly do knowing they need to treat deficiencies, didn't necessarily alleviate the need to come back in later in the season. But if we didn't do that in a separate application scenario, we were able to get through the season with just one single application of manganese. And the Stockbridge, a similar trend from the fact that at this site, we basically didn't have very heavy deficiency pressure. And so we were able to get by with just including manganese in the system once, whether it's a tank mix application or separating that application a few days later. So if we look at the yields then, as I said, that Owosso site got hit by drought pretty hard, and it's pretty evident that those drought conditions really masked any sort of treatment effects that we might have seen. So certainly in a low deficiency pressure like this, you can see that we're not seeing much of a difference however we managed manganese. And then really a similar trend at Stockbridge as well. Including manganese in the system really didn't even improve anything above control. And this is a similar site to what we saw the previous year. So you can kind of contrast that of the environmental effects and the site-specific effects have a pretty big influence with this deficiency in the field. So a few conclusions then off of what we've been working on with these tank mix scenarios then. And you can kind of break these up into a high deficiency scenario and a low deficiency scenario. And when we're dealing with heavy deficiency pressure in the field, separating out those applications seem to increase yield. Neither management scenario necessarily reduced the total number of applications in the field, which is certainly something that growers are looking for. But we did see increased yield, so that's certainly something to come away with as a recommendation. And the EDTA form of manganese tended to be a poor performer, even when tank mixing with glyphosate. In low deficiency pressure situations, it seems like it doesn't make an awful lot of difference whether we're tank mixing that manganese or not. So being able to break kind of what we see in the field into two classes here helps kind of explain some of these inconsistent results the growers have experienced previously in the field. So in 2010, then, we initiated some work looking at all these different products the growers have available to them. We looked at a number of different products here, and these really represent not only kind of a cross-section of formulations, but these are what growers in Michigan then have available to them from a number of different co-ops. And so there's certainly the defining characteristics here kind of set these products apart from one another. A few things of note, this manganese sulfate at the top is a dry product that's fairly difficult to bring into suspension. When it was available, it's a formulation called TechMag a number of years ago. It was a very popular form of manganese. The form that's available to growers now doesn't go into suspension well at all, and there's a lot of reluctance to use this. And the other thing to note, too, here is the two formulations we have in the bottom are kind of these full-spectrum fertilizer products. Very low concentrations of manganese relative to the rest of these, and based on the performance we saw of these in the first year, 2010, we ended up pairing both of those up with a companion full-rate manganese product from each respective company in 2011. So we took both of these studies required two applications of manganese throughout the season at both locations, Stockbridge and Owosso. And I'm going to just show a few brief tissue concentration numbers. This is from Stockbridge at our following our first application in early June, about to be three stage at this point. We sampled 20 trifoliates from each plot, the most fully recently expanded trifoliate. So we're actually sampling leaves that were not here present in the field when we sprayed. And you can certainly, we're seeing some trends emerge from this right away. The manganese sulfate, regardless of whatever rate we put on, and I'll mention we applied these at two rates as well, basically the high and the low rate off the label. And so at the high rate, regardless of rate, we're seeing significant increases in tissue concentrations relative to any other product. But we are seeing some other products that are perhaps more adopted by growers, standing above what our control treatments would be. But it's worth noting here, too, that the rate certainly seems to be a determining factor for a number of these products. So if you're going to increase those concentrations over the control, it's going to be important to go with a higher rate. We don't see the necessary separations in some of these between rates that we do the tissue concentrations with yield. So this is our Stockbridge site from last year. But you can certainly see that manganese sulfate is at least an equal or superior product to most of the rest. But we see some trends here of some other products that are performing fairly well. We've seen the Stockbridge and then at Owosso as well. So there certainly seems to be some interactions of rate here going on, that the higher rates typically are what is going to give you a better yield. But there's an indication here that there are some differences between products. And really those trends are kind of reinforced by what we saw this last year too. Our 2011 studies are still out in the field standing here, getting rained on today, I believe. But we see these similar trends in our tissue concentrations in 2011 as what we saw in 2010. Manganese sulfate still seems to be a superior product regardless of the rate we're using. But some of these other products, the Citraplex, the citric acid chelate, that Maniplex, which is the sugar alcohol that was referenced in the previous study, and to some extent this Maxin product, this blue circle here, a chelated product with kind of some adjuvants added in. Seem to be showing some promise that they might be better products for growers to adopt than some of the others. So basically, I kind of hit these concluding points just a moment ago. But manganese sulfate certainly seems to be an effective product that we're going to encourage growers to go with. But again, we're going to have to kind of solve the problems of the difficulty bringing into suspension and the tendency of that product to clog nozzles. It's a significant deterrent for producers. So with that, I'm not sure how we're doing on time.
You have 1 minute left.
1 minute? So I suppose we have 1 minute for questions then. Yes?
Do you think that the ineffectiveness of the EDTA over maybe the sugar alcohols might have to do with the molecular size and molecular weight
that's
trying to get through the leaves?
That's exactly what our speculation has been at this point, that EDTA compound, which is in many applications geared for soil applications, it might just simply be too large of a chemical compound to be effective at getting into the plant. Yeah.
I might have missed it on an early slide, but your low and high rates, was your high rates on a lot of those products above the label rate that they're recommending?
Our high rates for this product study were basically at the labeled rates. And almost all of these products provide a range, you know, 2 to 6 quarts or whatever. And so we're going with basically the low end and the high end. So these are still at labeled rates. Yes.
I'm sorry. I want to stop. But, we'll pick
thank
up
you.
Any during the break. Yes, thank you.